have any good answers about what was the best way to continue the evac mission, other than that UNEF needed to keep the hamsters moving steadily along as quickly as possible. The more land was cleared of hamsters, the more UNEF could concentrate forces and exert tighter control over the remaining Ruha population. Equipment maintenance schedules and availability. That was something I'd never had to concern myself with before. Now that I was an officer, a senior officer, I was supposed to know this shit. Know it, consider it, think about it, come up with solutions and implement them. Me. I wasn't only a publicity stunt. I was a real colonel in the U.S. Army, with a real colonel's authority and responsibility. I needed to be a real colonel. Park, Olufsen, you've been stationed here long?
Since we got here, sir, Olufsen said. And give me a sit-rep.
A sit-rep, sir? Park asked for the driver's seat. I could see her eyes in the mirror. She knew what a sit-rep was, so I made my request more clear. What's been going on with the hamsters around here?
Olufsen turned awkwardly in his seat so he could look at me while we talked.
Not much, sir. Low-level stuff. Some sabotage, dragging their feet on the evac schedule, but no real trouble. No violence. We used to get along pretty well with the natives, until he shot a glance at Park. Knocked their ships out of the sky, sir.
He said that last with a look of such clear admiration that I was embarrassed.
I didn't do squat, Olufsen. There was a team of soldiers who defended the launcher. That wasn't the only hot spot around the planet that day.
No, sir. It was kind of quiet here that day. There's nothing much strategic round here worth fighting over. If we hadn't heard chatter about the raid on our Z-phones and seen action going on upstairs, it would have been a normal day for us.
Park nodded from the driver's seat. Straight up, sir. We got into full battle rattle and hunkered down that day, but nothing happened. Then we got the all clear. This part of the planet is the back of beyond. Really bum-fuck Neptune. Now, up ahead, where we're going to plant potatoes or whatever, hamsters gave the Indian Army a boatload of trouble. No firefights right here. Nobody killed on either side. But the fucking hamsters. I could see her flint in the mirror.
It's all right, Park. You're a soldier, damn it. You can talk like one.
Yes, sir. The hamsters resisted every way they could. Equipment was sabotaged, so the Indians couldn't use anything here. All their gear had to be brought in from outside or rebuilt. Water supplies were contaminated. The hamsters would move around so they'd screw with the evac schedule. It got so bad the Indians had to put the whole region on lockdown, house arrest, like. And when the buses pulled up to drive hamsters away, they wouldn't leave their houses. Sat down on the floor and had to be carried out and loaded onto the buses. Slowed everything way behind schedule. The Kristang wanted to vaporize a village from orbit so the hamsters would get the message they couldn't mess with us beyond a certain point. UNEF figured if the Kristang had to step in, they'd see our mission here as a failure. So the Indians pulled in a British battalion as reinforcement.
Ha! That was a kick in the ass, huh, sir? Olufsen grinned. Brits under Indian command?
I nodded silently. UNEF stressed the importance of international cooperation, and officers were sternly instructed not to encourage or allow nationalist rivalries. But such orders had practical limits.
Goes to show we're all humans down here, I said, in a lame attempt at following the spirit of the rules.
Uh-huh, Park said. Between them, they got the place squared away on schedule, but that played hell with the schedule in the British sector, so now they're playing catch-up.
The evac schedule accelerated as we approached E-Day, the day the last hamster would take a trip up the space elevator. As more and more of Paradise was cleared of Ruha, we could concentrate our forces and rush the hamsters along. The schedule at first had looked illogical, giving evac priority to some thinly populated areas of the planet. And UNEF had speculated that Kristang wanted those areas cleared first so Kristang crops could be planted. But the lizards made no move to prepare the abandoned farmland and only sent down small teams of lizards to inspect the areas. A rumor went around that those areas were thought by the lizards to contain relics from the elder ancient supercivilization, relics which were the real prize worth fighting over for control of Paradise. Otherwise, the whole planet was generic farmland, of which there was plenty in the Orion arm of the galaxy. Maybe. All that mattered to UNEF is the Kristang told us to get those areas cleared out first, so we did. Coming up on Habit Trail, sir. That's straight ahead, Olufsen pointed. The road crested a rise. Ahead we could see a broad, shallow river valley, with the road going over a bridge in front of us and a fair-sized town spread out along the road beyond. Typical patches of farmland, some bare dirt from being freshly harvested, some tinted the golden yellow of the wheat equivalent the hamsters planted, and towering grain silos. The thin bright ribbon of railroad tracks went arrow straight southeast to northwest, angling across our path, and in the distance were parked an electric locomotive and a dozen freight cars. The small train was stranded there. Saboteurs had ripped up or undermined tracks and blown up or weakened rail bridges across the region. UNEF's original plan had relied on railroads to transport large numbers of hamsters quickly. Trouble was the hamsters figured that out right away, and every rail line on the planet had been rendered useless in a couple weeks. Habit Trail? I laughed. Olufsen grinned. He wasn't so awed or intimidated by me anymore.
The hamster name sounds like Haba Talin, so the first jokers here put up a sign, Habit Trail. The hamster mayor here was pissed when he learned what a habit trail is back on Earth.
Olufsen wasn't sympathetic.
Screw him.
There was a muffled sound from my Z-phone, something like, Planter, this is Stinger Lead. Planter here, I responded, after I got my Z-phone out from under the pile of body armor I'd buried it under. Planter was my current call sign. It had been designated by some joker in UNEF HQ, and my part-time aide got pissed about it and tried to get it changed to something cooler-sounding, but I liked it. Planter, if the hamsters were listening to our comms, and I had to assume they could, was a nice, friendly, non-aggressive call sign, which hopefully emphasized the peaceful nature of the missions I was assigned. We only planted on land the hamsters had already been evacuated from. Our missions didn't take any resources away from them, and we avoided contact with hamster populations whenever we could. Which wasn't today, because our convoy had to drive through Habit Trail. It lay on the only road to our destination.
Go ahead, Stinger Lead.
Stinger, my briefing packet for the mission said, was the call sign for the two-ship escort that would provide air support as we drove through Habit Trail. A pair of fully armed chicken gunships were supposed to deter any hamsters from getting adventurous as we drove by. Me? If I saw a pair of our own gunships now being used against us, I'd be more likely angry than intimidated. Angry enough to act? If payback was certain? Probably not. Either way, it felt good to have a pair of gunships supporting us. Planter, be advised my wingman has a power drop in one engine and needs to RTB. Without the voice coming from under a layer of body armor, I could now hear the pilot was female with a Midwest American accent. I expected her to say, you betcha.
Roger on the return to base, Stinger. Can you cover us through checkpoint Mike 2?
That was the map designation of Habit Trail.
Affirmative, Planter. I'll cover you bridge to bridge, over.
She meant from the bridge on this side of Mike 2 to the bridge on the other side of town. Beyond the second bridge was open farmland, the potential danger spots where we might need air cover were the choke points of the two bridges and the town itself.
Affirmative, Planter. I'll make a low pass over the town to wake them up.
Roger that, Stinger. Planter out.
UNEF had been debating whether it was more effective for convoys to arrive in towns unannounced or for air cover to do a flyover first. The debate about the subject had been short, because a convoy driving on dirt roads across flat farmland could hardly expect to sneak up on anything. The plume of dust in a convoy's wake stuck out like a sore thumb, visible for kilometers. The first bridge we drove over was an ugly concrete lump, built by the Kristang when they first occupied the planet. Two soldiers from the local security squad waved us on. They were stationed at the bridge to assure nobody had messed with it since it was last inspected. That was the situation we faced. Anything the hamsters could sabotage, they would. Take your eye away for a couple hours and a bridge would be blown up or weakened in some way to render it useless. A river barge would sink. Communications towers would fall. Unattended vehicles had their engines fried. To my surprise, we got through the town without any incident. Not even a hot-headed hamster kid throwing a rock, a clod of mud, or a lump of manure at us. Usually we could count on that now. It happened so often. And both sides were so used to it that kids felt emboldened because they learned from experience that our soldiers had orders not to shoot at children. unless they were shooting at us, which so far hadn't happened that I knew of. The town was more run down than such places used to be. I guess before the attempt to recapture the planet, the local hamsters were hoping their fleet would chase the Kristang away and everything would go back to normal. Normal, except for a large force of pesky humans in residence. After the raid failed, the hamsters saw that they had lost the planet for real, that they were being forced to leave and weren't coming back, and they were no longer interested in maintaining in good order anything that would be left behind for the Kristang to use. Instead, they were resentful, which I could understand, and clearly planned to trash the place a bit before the evac was over. Major infrastructure like the launcher and the space elevator and fusion reactors were off-limits under the strange rules of engagement that seemed to be enforced by both sides. After all, blowing up the launcher would be an admission the Ruha were never even going to try retaking Paradise, and that couldn't be good for hamster morale. We were through the populated area of town and approaching the Western Bridge in what felt like a few minutes. I'd been keyed up for something to happen. The body language of Park and Olafson told me they'd been ready for trouble, too, but it was all quiet. The Western Bridge was an elegant, delicate-looking structure, much longer than the Eastern Bridge. It was built by the Ruha, but on the piers of an earlier Kristang Bridge. I felt exposed driving across it, and we all exhaled when we went feet dry on the other side. Sticking my head out the window, I looked back at our convoy until the last truck cleared the bridge. According to the map and what I could see, there was nothing but fairly flat farmland for kilometers in all directions.
Planter, this is Stinger.
Thanks for the escort, Stinger. You're clear to RTB.
Roger that, Planter. You have fun now. Grow us some tasty food. Stinger out.
She flew the chicken over us in a wide circle, then retracted the weapons pods, powered up, and climbed to the east. Watching it go, I thought that our pilots, who got to fly cool advanced aircraft on Paradise, must be loving this mission, while the rest of us got M4s. It didn't seem fair. Why couldn't us ground pounders use captured Ruha rifles the way our Airedales flew captured Ruha aircraft? I settled back in my seat.
Sir? Olafson's voice broke my reverie. You met Kristang, right? We heard you went up to their station when you got the promotion.
A grimace flashed across my face before I put on what I hoped was a neutral expression. Olafson caught it because his eyebrows went up.
There was a ceremony at the station, yes. I scrambled
to cover my mistake.
My stomach didn't do well with the food they served.
True enough, though what made me sick was what the Kristang had said, and that I'd had to swallow my pride and keep my mouth shut.
What are they like, sir, if you don't mind me asking? I've never seen one for real.
You must have sensed my discomfort at the question.
Forget I asked, sir. That stuff is above my pay grade.
I never saw anything coming. A soldier in the second-to-last truck says he saw a streak just before the impact. I think that was his imagination. It could have been a railgun or some kind of silent artillery, or a truly smokeless rocket that left no exhaust plume. Whatever it was, one of them hit the cargo trailers of each truck, destroying the precious soil conditioner and seeds, all irreplaceable items. The warhead was something new also. It generated more heat than blast effect, likely calculated to burn out our seeds and the microorganisms in the soil conditioner. Scattered seeds we could have picked up. Burned seeds were no good for anything. It was the seeds they were after. To deny humanity the ability to sustain ourselves on Paradise, to force the Kristang to expand scarce resources for bringing in more seeds or bringing their pet humans back home to Earth. No one in any of the trucks was killed by enemy fire. Our only death was one soldier in the front seat of the Humvee behind the last truck. Their vehicle slammed into the suddenly stopped truck trailer, injuring the driver when her head hit the steering wheel. The soldier in the passenger seat took a piece of metal debris through his skull, killing him instantly. I don't think the hamsters intended to kill anyone, which was scant comfort to the dead and wounded. We were out of our vehicles fast, taking cover, looking for hostiles and helping the wounded. We never found out what type of weapon hit us, because Stinger reacted immediately and sent a pair of high-velocity missiles to hit the spot the attack was launched from. Those explosions sent us scrambling for cover again. Then Stinger screamed overhead, weapons pods extended and ready for trouble.
Planter, Stinger here. No hostiles in view. Over.
"Roger, Stinger," I replied, slinging my M4 over my shoulder. "The attack was probably triggered remotely."
"And guided," Park added, scanning the horizon with the scope on her rifle. "Somebody targeted our trailers and nothing else."
She had a good point. There was either an observer concealed somewhere, or the weapons had cameras. Even super-advanced alien smart weapons need to be told what to hit. I was about to uselessly tell Stinger to be on the lookout for an observer, which she was already doing, when an alert popped up on my Z-phone. The attack on our convoy hadn't been the only incident. Nearly simultaneous attacks had been launched across the continent. I called my CO and gave him a quick sit-rep. He cut me off halfway through my report as we were fine for the moment, and other units were not. From the noise in the background, all hell had broken loose at HQ. A text message from the local airbase told me a medevac buzzard was on its way. They wanted me to confirm the landing zone was secure. Shit, it did look secure to me the second before we got hit, and it looked secure now. The place was peaceful farmland if you ignored the plumes of black smoke rising from our burned-out trailers, and the chicken orbiting the area with weapons pods hot, looking for trouble and hoping to find it. Other than that, the LZ was secure. I reported in the affirmative and ordered people to spread out, far enough we weren't a single target, close enough that we could support each other in a fight. The buzzard arrived and flew out 5 wounded. The rest of us got our Humvees turned around so we could head back toward Habit Trail. Stinger was still flying high cover. She didn't buzz the town this time, and reported she could see hamsters assembling in the playing field of a school. Those hamsters didn't have weapons visible. There were no more than a dozen of them. Even if hamsters and Habit Trail weren't involved in the attack, they must have known something happened. Our trailers were still burning and sending black smoke high in the sky. "Planter, this is Crystal Fortress." That was the call sign for General Maitland, the regional commander. "Confirm you have 1 KIA at your location, 1 kilometer west of Habit Trail." "Crystal Fortress, Planter confirms we have 1 KIA and 5 wounded have been evac'd by Buzzard. Location is correct. No sign of enemy activity here. Over." I hoped to get more air support before we drove back through town. "Planter, stand by 1, the voice on the radio ordered. "Planter, listen carefully."
The voice this time was General Maitland himself.
"We need to show the hamsters that this isn't a game."
His voice sounded strange, like he was slowly reading a script.
"That they can't hit us with impunity. Go into Habit Trail and take 8 Ruhar at random. Your call. If anyone resists, use deadly force. Line those 8 Ruhar up in the center of town and shoot them. We want this to be public."
I had to lean back against the fender of a Humvee to keep my legs from buckling. My face must have gone white. People were staring at me. Captain Rivers silently mouthed, "What's up, Chief?" to me. I flashed back to when I was 8 years old, fishing in a creek with my friends on a warm, humid summer day. The kind of summer day that happens so rarely in northern Maine that when it gets to be 75 degrees, the natives complain about the heat. Me, my friends Bobby, Tommy, and a new kid, Michael. Not Mikey, Michael, he told us when we first met. He was a jerk, but his father was a big shot at the paper mill where my father worked, so we had to be nice to him and let him tag along with us. He was from Wisconsin and kept telling us how crappy Maine was and how we were stupid for living here. We only lived in Maine because our parents couldn't get jobs anywhere decent. And we were at a creek, having the type of free-range, unsupervised kid fun in the woods that freaked out city parents, looking for salamanders and fishing. Michael had a new fishing pole with fancy lures. The rest of us had old equipment and used wadded-up bread and pieces of cheese for bait. Bobby caught 3 good-sized fish, keepers for dinner, and Tommy and I were having fun but not catching anything worth keeping. Michael was in a bad mood because he hadn't caught anything, complaining that the fish in the creek were stupid, that we were splashing and casting shadows that scared away the fish. We mostly ignored him, until he hooked a frog by accident. He tortured that poor frog. It was bad enough that he hooked its belly and tore it open while reeling it in. And Michael was a sadistic little shit. He gleefully started using a hook to peel the skin off the frog's leg, while the animal struggled, and he choked it. I didn't do anything to stop him. I stood there, ashamed of myself, and did nothing but stare at the ground.
Bobby's father also worked at the paper mill, but Bobby was a better person than I was, even at 8 years old. Bobby snatched the frog away and stomped it on a rock to put it out of its misery. Michael started a fight, which Bobby and Tommy ended real quick. They thumped Michael and pushed him into the creek. When Michael shouted that he was going to tell his dad, Bobby waded into the creek and held that little shit's head in the muddy water until he cried uncle. Before we left, Tommy broke Michael's new fishing pole over his knee and threw his fancy tackle box of lures into the deep pool of the creek. And Bobby told Michael that if he told his father, or we ever saw him again outside of school, we were going to beat the shit out of him. At 8 years old, that was a threat Michael knew meant business. We never saw Michael again. His father transferred to a mill in Oregon that September and took the family with him. Michael, I figured, would grow up to be a wife-beater, or serial killer, or both, two sides of the same coin. My mind must have flashed back to the moment, because that was a time when I stood by and did nothing to defend the innocent. I was not doing that ever again. And I especially wasn't doing that while wearing the army uniform. Crystal Fortress, I said very slowly, loud enough the soldiers around me couldn't miss what I was saying. Confirm you are ordering me to murder 8 civilians. My lower jaw was quivering as I spoke. Execute 8 random civilians in public. I put my Z-phone on speaker, and Maitland knew what I was doing. Damn it, Colonel Bishop, I don't like it any more than you do. We're barely hanging on here. This shit can't continue. You have your orders. Carry them out. Sir, I said as I looked one soldier after the other in the eye. I can't do that. The looks I got back were as shocked as I felt. Even if I gave the order, it was doubtful anyone in the convoy would obey. What the hell are we gotten ourselves into? Shit. We should never have left Earth. Humans had no business being out here. God damn it, Bishop, you're not wearing that bird on your uniform for show. Sir, respectfully, you don't have the authority to override the rules of engagement or the code of conduct. Why the hell was I even having this conversation? We can... A strange voice broke in, a voice I recognized as a Kristang using a translator. Colonel Joseph Bishop, you are refusing to obey a direct order. Even the translator couldn't remove all of the lizard hiss to the voice. Lizards. I glanced upward involuntarily. They had ships in orbit that could vaporize my entire command here. I needed to be careful with the lives of the 20 humans under my command, very careful. I turned off my Z-phone for a moment, sticking it in a pocket. Hurriedly, I explained to the soldiers around me. The lizards showed me who they really are when I was up there for the promotion ceremony. The rumors you heard about messages and fortune cookies are true. They didn't rescue Earth from the Ruhar. They kicked the Ruhar out so the lizards can rape our planet for themselves. We're screwed either way. The only thing we have left out here is our humanity, and I'm not giving that up. The lizards are ordering me to murder 8 random hamsters. Why 8, sir? Olafson asked, which I thought was not exactly the most important question to ask at the time. Holding up my hands, I explained, lizards have 4 fingers on each hand. They think in terms of 8s, not 10s like we do. We're supposed to kill 8 civilians for every 1 human killed. When the Nazis held Rome and the Italians resisted, the Nazis shot 10 or 20 civilians for every German killed, grabbed random civilians off the street, lined them up on a bridge, shot them, and dumped their bodies in the river. The United States Army doesn't do that. My facts were kind of fuzzy on the subject, but the basic elements were correct. The Z-phone back on, I responded. As a soldier in the United States Army, I am required to refuse illegal orders. Deliberately murdering civilians is an illegal act. There was an enraged Kristang screech that didn't translate. Then my Z-phone went dead. I mean, completely dead. No lights. The lizards must have deactivated it. What now, sir? Captain Rivers asked. How the hell was I supposed to know? Nothing in my training had prepared me for this screwed-up situation. Let's get the lead truck detached from that busted trailer. The back of the truck's cab was scorched and the windows blown out, but the solid tires were still round and functional. The other 2 trucks were in bad shape. Their power cells had caught fire from the heat. I'll take the truck by myself. If the lizards upstairs decide to slap me down for disobedience, I don't want to take anyone else with me. And don't argue. That's an order. We roll out back to base. Keep the Hamvees dispersed. While the lizards could hit us from orbit, no matter how widely we were dispersed, I wasn't going to make it easy for them. Maybe we should put all the Z-phones in a bag and I'd keep them with me so the lizards couldn't target us by signal. Rivers put a hand to his earpiece, then handed it and his Z-phone to me.
Stinger wants to talk to you, sir.
So they hadn't deactivated all our Z-phones. Only mine.
Stinger, this is Planta. Go ahead.
I heard your comms traffic, sir. The Kristang ordered me to target the school and habit trail. I refused the order.
Disobedience was getting to be popular. Roger that, Stinger. Thank you. We're going to roll out.
Shit!
Stinger shouted.
I've lost control. Controls aren't responding. My gunner can't lock out weapons.
Scatter,
I yelled, waving my arms and pointing at the chicken that was approaching low from the southwest, weapons pods extended.
The lizards have control of the gunship.
Everyone ran. I dove into a ditch on the side of the road until I realized in a flash how stupid and useless that was. And selfish. The lizards had a problem with me, not my command. So I stood up and waved my arms at the chicken, trying to attract attention. My plan, if you could call it a plan, was to give a single-finger salute after the lizards launched a missile at me. That was stupid also. The lizards probably didn't recognize rude human gestures. Except they didn't launch at me. The chicken's remaining two missiles streaked off the rails, over our heads, and hit the school with a fiery explosion.
That wasn't us,
Stinger shouted frantically.
Oh, shit. They cut power. We're going down.
As I watched, the chicken staggered in the air, then dropped like a stone from about 300 feet, smashing into the ground with great force and plowing a trench in the soil a quarter mile south of me. Without me saying anything, soldiers began running to the crash site. I got there first because I wasn't weighed down with the full battle rattle of the others. The chicken was way more intact than I expected. Whatever the hamsters made them of was tough stuff. The tail and both winglets had broken off. The whole thing had rolled 360 degrees, but the cockpit and power center behind the seats was mostly in one piece. Not so for the two human occupants. The gunner in the front seat didn't have a head. An engine fan blade had broken loose and sliced him up good. The pilot behind him, I saw the name tag on a flight suit read Collins. She was missing the lower part of her left arm, and blood was running from her mouth. She wasn't conscious. Carefully, I unbuckled the strap and lifted off her helmet, which had a big crack front to back. It was ugly. God damn. How the hell was a girl, I mean woman, this young, flying a chicken? Even beat up like she was, she looked younger than me. She groaned and opened one eye.
Shh, don't move, Collins. I'm Colonel Bishop. I'm Planter.
I couldn't stop, sir. I couldn't stop.
Her voice faded, although her lips still moved silently, trying to talk to me.
It's all right. Stay with me. Collins? Collins?
Her head slumped while I was holding her. A last bubble of blood came out of her mouth, and she was gone. Her last words had not expressed fear. She had been telling me that she did her duty, that she hadn't killed hamsters at the school. Somehow, through some combination of circumstances, Collins had gone from being a little girl to joining the army, to helicopter flight school, to volunteering for duty with UNEF, qualifying to pilot a chicken gunship, to here, dying in the arms of a total stranger, killed by an alien species who did not have their own concept of humanity. There was no good reason for her life to end there that day. I broke down and cried. I wasn't alone in standing with my shoulders slumped, sobbing quietly. Lieutenant Collins wasn't the only person we lost that day. Her death was the last straw that broke our reserve. She hadn't been killed in combat. She'd been murdered by beings who were supposed to be our allies, our protectors, our saviors. The whole situation on Paradise had gone to shit so fast we'd lost almost all hope in a matter of a few months. Rivers tapped me on the shoulder, looked me in the eye, and shook his head once, silently. I got the message. The senior officer needed to set an example. I straightened up, angrily wiping my eyes with the back of a sleeve. Handing the Z-phone back to Rivers, I told him to give a sit-rep to UNEFHQ, as I didn't think I could keep professional at that moment. None of us knew what else to say. There wasn't anything to say. After a while, we got the two bodies out of the chicken and loaded into the back seat of the truck I drove. After we crossed the Western Bridge, instead of following the road through Habit Trail, I directed us to drive across fields in a wide circle, which we could do now that we weren't loaded down with trailers. It took an hour to bypass the town, involving a lot of hunting around for paths to ford streams, bumping across dirt and mud. The work and concentration kept people focused on the task of getting back to base. I lagged behind in the truck, keeping enough distance from the last Humvee that if the lizards decided to take me out with a railgun strike or a missile, there wouldn't be collateral damage among my people. It also made sense to let Humvee scout the best path across county, as the truck wasn't as capable off-road. We were back on the road for less than half an hour before the column ahead halted, and I stopped a quarter mile behind them. Rivers called me on the Z-phone I'd borrowed.
"Command says to wait here, sir. They're sending a buzzard."
Why? Command didn't say. One buzzard wasn't enough to evac all of us, and I couldn't imagine UNEF wanting to abandon functioning Humvees. Maybe the situation ahead was bad enough that Command was bringing us reinforcements with heavier weapons? I tried calling myself, but my Z-phone could only connect to Rivers. That's what happened when another species controlled all your comms. We shouldn't have let that happen. Of course, another species controlled all our food and other supplies, and the high ground, and Earth, so comms on Paradise might be the least of our problems. A buzzard, escorted by a chicken, roared in, circled us, and landed on the road ahead of the column. I saw Rivers walk ahead to talk to the soldiers. My Z-phone rang. It was Rivers.
"Sir, they want you up here."
There was a note of warning in his voice. I left my M4 in the truck and broke into a trot. As I passed Humvees, soldiers stood and saluted me. Some had tears in their eyes. They all looked angry. What the hell was going on? I reached the group gathered around the buzzard and saluted a Captain Randolph. The buzzard was U.S. Army, along with all the troops it carried. "Captain Randolph?" He saluted me, looked me quickly in the eye, but didn't hold his gaze. Whatever was going on, it made him uncomfortable.
"Colonel Bishop, I have orders to place you under arrest. Surrender your sidearm, please."
He held out his hand, almost apologetically. "Arrest?" I was genuinely shocked. "On what charges?" I demanded.
"Refusing orders from a superior officer, sir."
"Refusing to carry out illegal orders, Captain."
"Sir, that's above my pay grade," he said lamely. "Colonel, you're not the only person UNEFHQ has ordered arrested. Word is a lot of units refuse those orders." "We hear," he lowered his voice. "The Kristang hit some units from orbit, then they refused orders directly from,
He pointed toward the sky with his thumb.
"Please, sir, I can't risk my men's lives by failing to arrest you."
The implication was the lizards were watching and would kill all of us if I didn't surrender.
"Colonel," Rivers started to say, meaningfully glancing at his finger on the safety of his M4.
"Captain Rivers, you're in command here. Get these people back to base safely. Avoid trouble along the way," I ordered. Holding my sidearm with two fingers, I handed it to Randolph. "You're taking me to UNEFHQ?"
"No, sir."
His Adam's apple bobbed up and down nervously.
"All prisoners are going to a Kristang base. I'm sorry, sir."
Chapter 9. Jail. They put me in prison at the only Kristang base on the planet, staffed by the roughly 30 Kristang who had been inoculated with an experimental drug to protect against the biohazard on Paradise, all volunteers. An advanced guard of the most gung-ho, or the most desperate for promotion. Every one of them was a fanatical asshole. I was kept in isolation. True isolation. I didn't even see any lizards while in my cell. Food was delivered through a sliding drawer once a day. For entertainment, I watched the sunlight change direction in the tiny window, high up on the wall.
and listened for the screaming that went on intermittently, and rifle shots in the mornings. On the fifth, maybe sixth day, I had a visitor from the United States Marine Corps.
"Bishop, I'm Major Cochran. How are you, son?"
He glanced around the cell, looking for a place to hang his cover, then tucked it under his arm. He looked even worse than I felt, dark circles and bags under his eyes, and he was gaunt. UNEF HQ officers were setting an example by cutting their food rations. It was a race to see if we ran out of packaged food supplies before our first crops were ready for harvest. I leaned back against the wall, there being no place to sit or lay down other than the hard, cold floor. "Well enough, sir, considering. No complaints. The chow could be better, and this bed is hard, but at least it's not lumpy," I joked lamely.
"This is serious," Cochran frowned. "The Kristang want to make an example of you, you and the others who defied their orders."
"How many others? I've heard the firing squads in the mornings." Cochran looked stricken.
"Americans that I know of, 17. We're trying to get an exact count. Plus Brits, Indians, and Chinese, a couple French troops."
"All on death row?" He nodded slowly.
"That doesn't count the deaths when the Kristang got impatient and hit units from orbit. Collateral damage, they say,"
he said with a nervous glance at the ceiling, as if that were the only place the lizards could put listening devices.
"The sites they hit just happened to be where our people were hesitating to carry out orders to retaliate."
He glanced at me out of the corner of his eye.
"Your people were lucky. If you hadn't been famous to the Kristang, they would have wiped out your command with a railgun strike, along with habit trail. As it is, they wanted you to watch when they destroyed that school. The Kristang don't tolerate defiance from lesser species."
"Retaliation is when you hit back the people who hit you. Hamster women and children didn't hit us. That is plain and simple murder. They made me a colonel," I pointed to the bird on my uniform. "Said I'm a hero for killing Ruhar soldiers. Now they want to kill me for refusing to murder Ruhar women and children?"
"You did a lot of things right, but..."
"Yeah, you fuck one sheep."
"What?"
he asked, eyes wide open. "It's a joke, forget about it. I could say one aw shit wipes out 100 attaboys, huh?"
"Something like that," he nodded.
"So you're here to, what, hear my confession, act as my JAG lawyer, slip me a spoon so I can dig a tunnel out of here?" I pointed to the hardened concrete floor or whatever incredibly tough substance the Kristang used as building material. He shook his head.
"I'm sorry to say I'm only here to show the United States military support and concern. The Kristang don't need a confession, and you don't need a lawyer, because there won't be any sort of trial or hearing."
"Right. Why bother with justice when you could just execute people?" I waved my hand, feeling sorry for the man who had to be in an incredibly awkward position. "Save your breath. You're going to say something about how aliens have different concepts of justice and military discipline. I know all that. I also know that this kind of right and wrong doesn't depend on whose eyes you're looking through. It's wrong." Cochran looked up at the tiny window. There wasn't anything he could see. "Major, you get the feeling that we're on the wrong side of this war? The more I learn about the lizards, the more I'm convinced we're fighting on the Nazi side of this one. In World War II, the SS lined up civilians and shot them in retaliation for their attacks on German soldiers. The Allies didn't do that." I pointed to the U.S. flag on my uniform. "We're civilization. The Nazis were not civilization."
"The Kristang didn't attack Earth," he pointed out.
"Major, unless you've totally had your fucking ears closed." Cochran stiffened from anger, but I could see a lot of fear.
"Watch your mouth, soldier.
I still outrank you, Major," I emphasized the last. "Has the Army busted my theater rank back to sergeant yet? No? Then I'm still a full bird colonel, and unless you've had your ears closed..." I left out the curse word because I didn't want him to leave, he being the only human I'd seen in days. "The Ruha raided Earth. They hit us to degrade our industrial capacity so we wouldn't be quite so useful to the lizards. They didn't hit cities. They didn't even hit military bases. They just hit industrial infrastructure, power stations, and refineries. If the Ruha hadn't hit us first, the lizards would have appeared in the sky, told us we're working for them now, and then wiped out a couple 100,000 people to make their point. The only reason we didn't realize from the start that we are now slaves to the Kristang is we were so grateful for them chasing away the Ruha.
The hamsters did the Kristang a favor. We humans don't mean a damn thing to either side. You've heard the rumors of what's going on back home? From the fortune cookies? Shanghai, Paris, San Francisco?
Rumors, Cochrane protested lamely. Rumors I believe, a lot more than I believe the censored crap our supposed allies allow UNEFHQ to tell us. What's next for me? I've been waiting here for days.
Cochrane glanced away, then met my eyes.
Firing squad tomorrow morning, for the remaining male prisoners.
Male prisoners?
He let out a long breath.
Male prisoners are simply shot. Women, they... You know the Kristang attitude toward females. A woman with authority over men is bad enough, but a woman who defies orders from men? The Kristang can't stand it. It drives them absolutely batshit crazy. And they're making an example. Women prisoners are stripped naked, tortured, and hanged. Slowly.
He looked like he was going to puke.
They made us watch. They made UNEF Command watch yesterday.
Oh, shit. And you didn't do anything?
Do what, Colonel? He said with emphasis. I'm sure you appreciate that UNEF Command has limited options. We're at the end of the longest supply line in history. All of our ammo, medical supplies, all of our food has to come here on a Kristang starship. At peak, we had enough food stocks for 14 weeks, which was plenty, when the Ruhar evacuation was scheduled to be complete in a year, and the Kristang resupply ships were coming here like clockwork. With the Ruhar raids disrupting deliveries, we're down to about a month of food. The entire expeditionary force could be destroyed by simply withholding food supplies, and our only ride home, he pointed upward with his thumb, is with the Kristang. We can't even get off the ground by ourselves. The Kristang are only going to support our presence here as long as we are reliable allies in this fight. We volunteered to come here, and now that we're here, we have to make the best of it.
He shook his head.
Look, Colonel, you and the other objectors like you put us in one hell of a mess here. You can call us slaves if you want. The fact is that humans are subordinate to the Kristang, however you say it. We're not used to that. Especially you and me as Americans, not being completely in charge of our destinies. UNEF Command is not protesting your fate, because they're more concerned about what's happening back home than they are about us here, or about one Mustang colonel.
I understand. I tried to put on a brave face, but in truth I was scared shitless. I kept my hands clutched together behind my back because they were shaking so badly. Not scared about dying in front of a Kristang firing squad, I had accepted that fate when I refused to kill the hamsters. I was afraid of disgracing myself. Afraid that when the moment came and I was up against the wall, I would piss my pants or throw myself on the ground crying and blubbering for mercy, disgracing my species. Just thinking about that, thinking of how disgusted the lizards would be to see a human acting so weak, put a bit of steel in my nerves. I could use that. Use that thought to turn my fear into hatred. Hatred of lizards. Yes, screw their whole Nazi stinking lizard species. Send them straight to hell.
Major, I pushed myself away from the wall and offered my right hand, which was no longer shaking.
Thank you for coming. No soldier wants to die alone. Tell UNEF Command thank you for me.
We shook hands. I could tell he didn't know what to say.
If you ever get the chance someday, tell my folks I did what I thought was the right thing. I didn't have long to contemplate my fate because Major Cochrane was gone for less than a minute when alarm sounded across the Kristang base, followed shortly by a tremendous explosion. The floor of my cell heaved up to smack me in the face. I was seeing stars, my ears ringing. A second explosion bounced me off the floor and a section of the outer cell wall cracked and fell away. My head was still spinning, but my body didn't wait for an engraved invitation. I was hightailing it out the busted wall before I realized what I was doing. Army training was good, and it kicked in right when I needed it. To get my bearings, I looked up at the sky, which was a big mistake. Right at that moment, a split second after I saw the familiar twinkling of starships jumping into high orbit, there was a searingly bright explosion above that knocked me to the ground, spots swimming before my stunned eyes. A replay of what happened in my hometown. The intense light had to be a Kristang ship getting vaporized in low orbit. The Ruhar were back.
I crawled on the broken pieces of wall, half blind and deaf, and didn't know whether to be afraid or happy or fatalistic about the turn of events. The Ruhar hadn't come back to rescue the UN Expeditionary Force from the lizards, and no hamster was going to be happy to see me. As I crawled along the ground, my vision and hearing slowly returning, my mind raced. What next? Where the hell did I think I was going? Whether I thought about it or not, which was the whole point, my army training fully kicked in. Assess the situation. Start with the facts I knew. Fact. I was scheduled for execution by a species that I now consider to be an enemy of humanity. Fact. Therefore, considering fact number one, UNEF's authority to arrest me and turn me over to the Kristang was invalid, and I had no duty to follow such illegal orders. Fact. I was making this legal shit up as I went along. Fact. That didn't make my legal reasoning any less effective. We're on an alien planet caught between two warring species with little to no hope of getting home or even surviving another month. UNEF's overall authority was rather thin out here, especially since the Ruhar's surrender agreement and truce with the Kristang was apparently, let's say, subject to interpretation, depending on who had the bigger fleet in system at the time. My ears were still ringing, but my vision was returning in between the spots. I was on hands and knees on the ground outside my cell, partly atop broken pieces of wall. Around me, all over the base, buildings had collapsed partly or completely. Secondary explosions were still causing chaos. We must have been hit with a hyperkinetic railgun round, closely followed by smart missiles. The Ruhar knew exactly where to hit the Kristang base. They must have launched ordnance as soon as they came out of jump. From what little I could see, the prison areas had sustained the least damage, while the main part of the Kristang complex was more than flattened. It was a smoking crater. A hypersonic penetrator round coming in even at .05C could do a tremendous amount of damage. My guess was the railgun dart had been closely followed by a smart missile with submunitions to take out critical parts of the base that survived the initial strike. And my vision was good enough to see more twinkling lights in the sky. Lots of twinkling lights in the sky. There were no additional explosions, which I figured meant the token force of Kristang ships had either been wiped out or jumped away. That many lights demonstrated the Ruhar had arrived in force. As I watched, blinking, there were more lights. Holy shit. This wasn't merely another raid. The Ruhar were here in strength to take the planet back. This was a different ballgame now. If I hadn't already made up my mind, seeing signs of the Ruhar armada would have done it for me. UNEF's mission on Paradise was over, one way or another. If the Ruhar were now back in charge, all humans on the surface were POWs, sooner or later. And if Paradise was about to become a hot battle zone, our M4B1s and captured Ruhar air power would only get us caught in the middle. Oh, shit. It just hit me. Food. If the Kristang had lost Paradise, there would be no more incoming food shipments for humans. The fucking lizards weren't going to make any effort to resupply us if they'd lost Paradise, and the hamsters didn't have access to Earth to get human food. Would the Ruhar be generous enough to let humans continue growing our food on Paradise, on land we'd taken from them? I didn't want to find out. Food. The Kristang had been feeding me once a day, and I assumed feeding the other human prisoners, so there must be a supply of human food on the base. And since the lizards were ruthlessly efficient, they would have stored the food close to the prison area. I needed to find that food before I did anything else. My vision was recovered enough to see where I was going. Hearing was iffy. I couldn't tell whether sounds were reverberating in my abused eardrums or coming from outside my head. Inside. I needed to get back inside. Food storage would logically be inside, not out where I was. Against instincts, I stepped gingerly back inside my former cell and tried the door. It was busted and jammed at an angle, but it wouldn't budge. Back outside, hurrying because I was now thinking clearly and wanting to be long gone before the Ruhar arrived or any surviving Kristang looked for me, I scrambled along the fractured wall looking for a way in. It was simple. There was a door, unlocked. Back inside, I peeked around the corner, not seeing anyone in the corridor. Cell doors had a tiny window just above my eye height. I stood on my toes to look in. The first one was empty, and the second. The third cell's door was partly ajar because of a large crack that went to the ceiling, and looking between the door and the frame, I could see the feet and legs of a person, a human,
laying on the floor under debris from the collapsed ceiling. Getting the door open was easy. It was locked only from the inside. I pulled on the handle and pushed it open. It took two strong efforts to get the door free from the warped frame, and once I was inside, it was clear my effort had been wasted. The legs belonged to a French officer. His chest had been crushed when the ceiling fell in. Training told me this was the time to look for survivors, not for sentiment. The door of the cell across the corridor was intact, but the outside wall was mostly gone. Inside was the body of a British Army major. From the damage, I guessed his cell had taken a hit from a Ruhr missile submunition. It was ugly. The next four cells were empty. Then the corridor took a right turn, and around the corner were the bodies of Major Cochrane and the Cristang who had been escorting him. They were both under a pile of rubble from the ceiling. Cochrane didn't have much blood on him, but he didn't have a pulse. The Cristang had a piece of what looked like metal reinforcing rod through his chest. I noted that Cristang blood was a much darker red color than human blood, and I paused to wonder if their blood had a higher iron content. It's amazing what goes through my mind at times. The Dan Cristang was unarmed. I'd hoped the lizard had a rifle or any sort of weapon. No such luck. I had to crawl over the ceiling rubble to get past them and through a section of corridor without doors until I came to a cell block. After another pair of empty cells, I glanced through the window to see a human, a naked black woman. She had her back to me, trying to enlarge a crack in the outer wall, and even a quick glimpse revealed ugly scars on her back. In what I later realized was a stupid move, I scrambled back to Major Cochrane, dragged him from the rubble, and carefully removed his uniform shirt, pants, and boots. It made me feel disrespectful to him, but the naked female soldier needed Cochrane's clothes more than he did, and he still had boxer shorts on. I left him propped up with his back against the wall and hurried back to the woman. Since I knew cell doors were soundproof, I skipped yelling and pounded on the door once, then twice, then three times, hoping the woman inside would understand that as an attempt to communicate. Then I turned the handle and cracked the door open. "You all right in there? I'm Bishop, U.S. Army," I said in a harsh whisper. "Staff Sergeant Adams, sir, 1st MEF," she said in a voice shaking with relief. 1st Marine Expeditionary Force. Cochrane's Marine Corps uniform was appropriate for her to use. As if that mattered anyway. Without looking around the door, I tossed the clothes in and apologized they were all I could find. She quickly pulled on the shirt, not bothering to get it buttoned, and pulled the door open to dart into the corridor. "Thank you for the clothes, but I'd rather get the hell out of here right now." Shit. I thought of her as a woman first, and a soldier or marine second. Of course she'd care a hell of a lot more about getting out of her cell than about whether some other soldier saw her naked. She looked at me, then at my rank insignia, momentarily confused because I was too young to be a colonel, then recognition dawned in her eyes. "Oh," she managed a half-salute while pulling pants on. "You're that, Bishop, the colonel. What the hell is going on, sir?" "The Ruhr are back, and this isn't a simple raid they have an armada upstairs. I think they're taking the planet back, in which case UNEF is out of a job. And it's Sergeant Bishop, not colonel. I was only a colonel because of the damned lizards." Adams gave me a look that I'd seen many times from staff sergeants. "Bullshit, sir, you don't get to do that." "Do what?" "The lizards didn't make you a colonel, UNEF did. They wouldn't do that unless it benefited us humans. Your rank is an advantage. No soldier gives away an advantage on the battlefield." "Sir." There was that look again. Shit. Damn it. I didn't even get to feel all self-righteous about my rank. "You're right, you're right. These boots are way too big. They'll only make me trip over my own feet," she said, and kicked them off. "I'll go barefoot for now." I nodded and gestured for her to follow me quietly. We both jumped as a secondary explosion boomed across the base, the sound echoing in the corridor. It happened two more times, each time less violently. And then a Cristang soldier came around the corner. On a physical level, I had no chance against the Cristang warrior. I was tired, weakened from stress and hunger, while it was larger and stronger than me and armed with a rifle. On any other level, it had zero chance. It was at least as disoriented as me. It was completely surprised to find a human alive and outside of a cell, and it was glancing back over its shoulder as it came around the corner. I had the advantage of a massive adrenaline surge. Before either of us knew what was happening, I ripped the rifle out of its hands and went into a killing frenzy fueled by sheer terror. Unconsciously assuming the Kristang rifle had some sort of feature that prevented unauthorized use, I slammed the butt of the rifle under the lizard's chin twice, maybe three or more times, maybe hitting its throat, I don't remember. All I know is that in one moment it was upright, and the next moment it was falling, and I was crashing to the floor on top of it, bashing the rifle butt into its skull over and over. There was a red fog in my vision that was part Kristang blood and part survival instinct. I put absolutely everything I had into driving that rifle butt through its brain. If you've never been in combat or in a car accident, a thought for a split second that you were going to die, you can't imagine how fast images went through my mind. Every ounce of hatred for its Nazi fucking species for what they had done or were doing or planned to do to Earth. Every bit of anger for what it had done to Sergeant Adams and Miranda Collins and other women. All my carefully U.S. Army rules of engagement contained rage at the ignorant religious fanatic savages who burned schools and killed children in Nigeria. Every asshole who tried to bully me in high school, at my 8-year-old impotence while that sadistic shit Michael tortured a frog, every person who had ever cut me off in traffic, down to the coach who had berated my impressionable young self for failing to be perfect in Little League baseball games. It all went into that rifle butt until I had driven it clear through the skull of that genetically enhanced super warrior and was scraping concrete or whatever hardened material the lizards made the floor from. The next thing I know was Sergeant Adams tugging at my shoulder, trying to bring me back to reality. I looked up and back at her with an expression on my face that must have terrified her more than the Kristang ever had, for she jumped back away from me. I dropped the rifle and rose shakily to my feet.
"Jesus fucking Christ," Adams said in a hoarse voice. "I think I'm gonna be sick."
I felt the same. I had killed before, but always at a distance. Always rifle rounds reaching out to kill people I couldn't always see clearly. And this was different. In my rage, I had crushed the Kristang skull like a ripe melon. There were broken bits of white bone, dark red blood, and everything else was like lumpy gray mashed potatoes or Thanksgiving turkey stuff and just icky, unidentifiable bits.
"Breathe," I said. "Breathe deep and slow."
It wasn't clear if I was talking to Adams or to myself, for my stomach was heaving. We both stood leaning against the wall, overcome with shock, breathing deeply. She got control of her stomach first. I was coming down off a frightening adrenaline high. She walked over to the Kristang's prone body, and to my utter surprise, kicked it viciously.
"I recognize this fucker. He's the asshole who tortured me."
She leaned over and spat where its face used to be.
"Are you okay, sir?"
There was dark red Kristang blood splattered over the front of me, including on my face. My left pinky finger was bent and began to throb as I noticed it. I don't remember when it got sprained or whatever.
"Yeah, fine. What now, sir?"
I looked at her blankly, still thinking like a buck sergeant. She was a staff sergeant and outranked me, so... Oh yeah, shit, I'm a colonel now. For whatever that was worth. A colonel in an army that was trapped on an enemy-held planet. A colonel in an army that had handed me over to another enemy to be executed for the crime of trying to keep a shred of my humanity.
"Adams? I say we search this place for other prisoners and food supplies, then we steal some transport and pop smoke. Meaning, get the hell out of there."
"Hoorah," she said, which was the jarhead equivalent of the proper U.S. Army hoo-ah. I looked at the Kristang rifle in my hands. Better find out if this thing works. It didn't appear to have any damage from me using it as a club against its former owner. I pointed it at the dead Kristang, braced it against my shoulder, and pulled the trigger. Nothing.
Huh.
A button. There was a yellow button on the right side above the trigger. Depressing the button made it turn red. This time the trigger worked. An explosive tipped round hit the Kristang's torso and a fountain of gore splattered back onto me. Not that I could tell the difference. Yellow means safety is on, red means safety is off.
Got it.
We only found two more live prisoners. Most of the cells were empty, and as we walked closer to the center of the base, more of the building had collapsed. Adams had to be careful walking across broken bits on her bare feet. The first prisoner we released was a female captain in the Indian Army, a buzzard pilot named Desai.
She was naked, of course. Adams went in to reassure her that we were rescuers and to give her my uniform shirt, which was long enough to cover her ass. Adams held her hands up and